Everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Alchemist Lounge. It's Alex Atwood back with you in the lounge, and today I'm bringing in someone who's in some deep conversations with some folks at the top of their game, but he keeps it as relatable as hanging out with one of your best friends from high school. He's a keynote speaker. He's a mind shift master. He's the MC behind the mic at the CLS Experience podcast. Welcome, Craig Siegel, to the show.
Wow. I'm going to take a second and receive that. That felt good. Never heard one quite like that. I could tell you put some effort into it. And usually I'm the one dishing out those intros. So like I said, I received that and I appreciate that, brother. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, thank you, brother. Well, you've gotten a lot of nods from, I saw like Daryl Strawberry and Brian Dawkins, and you have a book, The Reinvention Formula. And it sounds like it's all about turning challenges into gifts. And I want to tell you, just like I said on the intro, I really love your style. It's relatable and it hits differently. Have you always been so authentic?
No, on the contrary. In fact, I spent 35 years very inauthentic. And, you know, I was showing up in the world, I think like most people, sadly, based upon how I thought I was supposed to, or how I wanted the world to perceive me, or how I thought they wanted to perceive me, living in the footsteps of other people's expectations. And basically, I was living someone else's life. And all I had to do was wake up and change absolutely everything. And it's funny because when you're inauthentic, it's like it's a heavy load. And just to be clear, like there were times like when I was myself and so forth, but I didn't really know who I was. And I've been on this spiritual but personal development journey for years, but I was a gladiator in the wrong arena. I was on Wall Street and all that stuff. And I had some relationships, but I was kind of repeating similar patterns. And then I started running marathons a few years back, which was a pivotal moment. Started to get clarity, started to give me purpose in a season when I really could use it. And it showed me that I could be successful in something I didn't necessarily have experience in. But then the pandemic, which was kind of like a forced pivot, because I shut down my business on Wall Street for what I thought would be 2 weeks. And when I got quiet for the first time in my life, it allowed me to just understand how miserable I was. And I was nowhere close to the word alignment. And so I made the decision in that moment to reinvent myself and to leave my Wall Street career behind and set out to do something meaningful with my life. And that's when I was able to put together CLS and coaching and speaking and the book and the podcast and all that stuff. And right before I leaned into it, I had this voice. Can I really do this? You mentioned a bunch of celebrities right there. Just to be clear for your listeners, I had none of that in the beginning. I had 300 Instagram followers, no connections, nothing. But I said, I'm going to do this. And there's no guarantee that it's going to pop off. But here's what I'm going to guarantee to myself. For the first time ever, I'm going to show up to the world as the real, raw, strange, authentic Craig Siegel. And I might not be for everybody. In fact, that's preferred. But the right people will gravitate and life will act as a true, authentic filter, and the wrong people will go elsewhere. And I made that commitment to myself, and I started to show up as me with all the weird stuff and the energy and all that. And ironically, or maybe not, that is when the world began to see me. So long-winded answer, but I've only been super authentic for the last few years. And as a result, I've never been more abundant, more happy, more peaceful, made more money, and all the things that come with it.
So it sounded like the marathon was one of the first catalysts in where you are today. So, and you said you were working on Wall Street at the time, and it sounded like you had a business on Wall Street. So tell me a little bit about who you were then, right? What was the year that you ran the marathon?
I ran six marathons. The first one. Yeah. So that first year in 2018, when I discovered the sport of running, I have a bit of an addictive personality, as you'll soon find out. I actually ran four marathons that year.
Wow. So that takes a certain mindset for someone who's never ran a marathon before to commit to running four marathons. And at the time you said you were on Wall Street. So tell me a little bit about like who you were on Wall Street that had you do that.
I was in such a dark place because Wall Street was a lot of fun until it wasn't. There's a lot of stress and unpredictability. And eventually I left and I pivoted and I started something else in finance as well that was a little bit less stressful. But they were ultimately just like, they were stopping points. It wasn't my final destination by any means. Who I was on Wall Street, I was somebody that was trying to figure this thing out, this thing called life. Why am I here? What's my purpose? And probably about 10, 13 years ago, like in the beginning of Wall Street, I associated my purpose with making money, which was fine at the time because everybody should have something. Obviously, I was much more unenlightened and immature then. There's a lot more to success than just making money. But then when I realized, like, when I was making money and I was still miserable and I was having fun and I would wake up every day, oh, I have to do this again. And look, for everyone listening now, like, you're going to spend about a third of your life in your career, probably another third sleeping. You better love what you do. And I speak from contrast. And so I was just trying to find myself. I was trying to do good, but I wasn't making the best choices with the relationships, the people I associated myself with, the career I was in. And I was just always seeking. And also, I had an ego, if I'm being honest. And I seeked validation. Like, I wanted to impress people that, you know, whose opinions weren't even valid, if I'm being honest. Yeah. I know that now. But that's who I was back then. But I don't regret any of it because it's all part of our journey. It's like, welcome to life, right? And everybody has seasons they're not necessarily proud of, and you're trying new things and you're trying to find yourself. And it brought me to where I am today. But that was who I was back then, which was much more unenlightened type of cat.
Yeah. And so here came an opportunity to run a marathon, right? Yeah. So when you saw that opportunity and you said it was a big catalyst, were you in shape to run marathons?
So a few years back, a bunch of things happened at once. I had just got out of a toxic relationship, which is never fun. My best friend, my dad, had just gotten diagnosed with cancer, stage 4 lung cancer. He's still battling. And I was at my job that I was the opposite of passionate about. And so I was drinking more than I'd like to admit, if I'm being honest. But I didn't stay there long because in divine intervention, I stumbled upon running. And that was kind of like, I'm so romantic about running because I'll always associate it with this. It was like that gateway for me to kind of find something that's really big, audacious, and scary and just lean in and attack it. But it's not so much the end result of crossing the finish line of 26.2 miles. It's who you become in the process, a better human being, better decisions, more discipline, going to bed a little bit earlier, cutting out the booze, waking up earlier, eating right. And so the first thing I did was I ended up signing up for like a 5K, which was 3.1 miles after I'd been running for like a month. And I struggled to finish up, but I did. When I say finish, I mean like without stopping. And then I was like, all right, what's next? And then I did a 10K, which is 6.2 miles. And then after that, it's like, all right, if we're going to think, let's just think big. And I signed up for the New York City Marathon. And this all happened, I would say, probably within 6 months. And to answer your question, was I in great physical shape at that time? No, I was getting better. I was probably better than average. You know, I was running and stuff. But I don't know if I was equipped essentially to dominate 26.2 miles. But I had a lot of heart and grit. And I was channeling emotional pain that I've been carrying for years. And I think that's good energy if you could channel it. And I also want to inspire my dad, who, like I said, was battling cancer and all that stuff. And so was I in great, unbelievable physical shape? No, but my mindset was there. And so we pushed through. But then it started getting better and better and becoming addicted to finding out how I can improve and so forth. And I went down the rabbit hole of running.
Got it. Wow. There you were. You just finished the marathon, right? How did that feel? What shifted after you completed your first marathon that had you go to 3 more in the same year?
Great question. I talk about this a lot in the book, the Reinvention Formula. And at the time when I signed up for the marathon, it was such a big, scary, audacious goal. And I put myself out there for the world. It held me very accountable. But I'm growing at such a rapid pace these days as a human and what I'm capable of and what I believe to be possible and my expansion, that a lot changed in the 6 months or maybe 3 months of me signing up for the marathon and actually completing it. And so when I finished the marathon and I crossed the finish line, I had the most unique blend of different emotions of both pride of accomplishment, but also disappointment. Because as we started to get closer to the marathon, I started to consider that maybe I could run sub 4 hours, which in the running world, like for a civilian who's not dead serious about running, it's very good. And I finished the New York City Marathon, the first one at 4:12. And I remember thinking I had grown so much that it was no longer good enough to just finish. We wanted to do it at an elite level. Yeah. And then I became obsessed. And then it took me not the next marathon, but the one after that, I hit 3:53. And then probably 2 months later, ran Philly in 3:39. And then here we go. And I think I could think of worse addictions. And so I just became addicted to improving and getting better at running. And I believe a lot of it's mindset. So the reason why I wanted to run four is because I'd grown so much that I didn't want to just do it. I wanted to do it at a very high level.
How did that show up around other things in your life?
That's the kicker. It started to translate to everything in my life. That's why I don't think there'd be a CLS without the running season, because it started to show me that I could be super successful in things I didn't necessarily have experience in. And I started to hold myself to a higher standard. And as a result, I started to raise my identity. And so it's a beautiful question. It translated everywhere into all areas.
Mm. So there you were. Did you have the same job after? So here you are training for marathons, right? You just gotten an incredible time for a first timer on your first marathon. And now you've committed yourself to four more with improvement in mind, right? With really improvement in mind. So did you go back to the same job that you were unhappy about? Or did you make a shift?
Yeah, it was my own business.
I got it.
I was my own. Yeah, and I still had it. And the running season basically saved me, yeah. Like kept my sanity, right? Because I wasn't happy at my job and I didn't take time to pause and reflect and realize that I had a choice and I could design my own life. And if I wasn't happy with where I was, it wasn't a life sentence, I could pivot, I could change. And so the running was that outlet for me. It was so beautiful and special. And then ultimately the pandemic, when I had a second to catch my breath and there was no work in addition to the running, is when I put it all together.
Did you experience runner's high? Did you experience like a meditative state when you were out there?
People ask me all the time if I meditate, and it's like, I don't sit in a corner and just close my eyes and meditate. For me, running is my moving meditation. And yes, I feel high as a kite after every run.
Yeah,
if I'm being honest.
Yeah, there's a couple of elements to your story that really resonate with me. First, it sounds like as soon as you signed up for that marathon is when the marathon or the transformation started happening, right? Because you signed up, you committed, and that was it. And those 3 months in themselves sounded like you evolved quite a bit. And then here you come out of the marathon, you're running three more marathons. Did you hit your goal in terms of improvement on the next three?
I wanted to break four.
Yeah.
Then I wanted to break 3:30. The last one I ran was last October in Chicago. It hit 3:31, but I left a lot on the table. And ironically enough, in about 5 weeks, I have the New York City Marathon, baby, my personal favorite.
Yeah.
And one thing I did differently for this one is I hired a coach.
Yeah.
Because I had run really well for like a civilian, all these marathons, but I started getting this voice in my head. I'm like, what could you do if you really aligned yourself with someone that knows what they're doing? And I've associated so much pleasure with hiring coaches these days. And I encourage everybody listening today, if you want to be better at something, find out who's excelling in it and see how you can learn from them. Mm. We don't have enough time to figure out everything by ourselves. And you know, the CLS, the brand is exploding right now. I say very humbly, it's an empire. I'm engaged, who's got a brand new puppy. And so I decided to work with someone as a former Olympian. And now I have actual strategy to go along with just heart and grit. And so I'm pumped to see what we put out in 5 or 6 weeks in New York. No predictions, but my current PR, as they call it in the running world, personal record or personal best, is a 3:31. That was last year. And I'm super confident that we should do much better than that.
Wow. That's a story. That's a story of just strength And it absolutely required a mind shift. So here you are. So now you're prepared, in my opinion, coming out of all of these marathons and this newfound place where you can find yourself in a meditative state and where you can start to commit. So here comes the pandemic, right? And at the time, I'm assuming you're still running regularly, right? So initially when you decided to close your company, what was behind that? And what was the mind shift or what was the intention that you created during that time?
When I got quiet, I realized how miserable I had been. And so I began to make it so real for myself that I began to associate death with choosing to go back and be miserable after lockdown. And so now that I knew I was essentially already living my worst case scenario, I decided to become available for what else is out there. And so from studying personal development so long, I just put together a strategy. And that was to identify what my passions are, what I absolutely love in the world. And this is good for anyone listening. This is a 6 or 7 exercise right now. I would suggest to make a list of 10 things that you absolutely love. I don't care what it is, if it's reviewing movies or, you know, collecting baseball cards, whatever your thing is, make a list of 10. And then on the other side, make a list of 10 skill sets that you might have, or superpowers or X factors. And so for me, I'm obsessed with personal development. That one was easy. And then humbly, I can communicate pretty effectively. And so that's when I married those two and I started CLS. And I didn't want to be the next Tony Robbins. I want to be the first Craig Siegel. I was very intentional. I put together a 10-lane highway because I didn't want to rely upon one thing. Speaking, coaching, book deal, podcast, communities, all the things. Reverse engineered it. And then I leaned in. And for the first time in my life, I was in alignment. And so when I got quiet, I realized how much out of alignment I was doing what I was doing. And I knew in my soul, just like most people do, that I was here for something more. And I was able to put together what that more was. And for me, that's spreading optimism, and giving people tangible strategies to remove limiting beliefs and do something meaningful with their life. And so I leaned in, brother. And as I like to say, because people think it's an overnight success, it doesn't take time. It just takes alignment.
Mm. There was three things that I'm hearing you say, and they're hitting. The first is quiet, right? So you found yourself in a place of quiet, and I'm seeing that as a mental quietness. And once you have that quietness, you just realize you had a choice, right? You didn't have to work in this company anymore. You had a choice in the matter of what you did. And when you learn to run a marathon, having no experience, like you said, you're a civilian. Well, you didn't have any experience in what you're doing now. And there you went and created it from nothing. So that is a remarkable journey that you went on. Let's jump into the reinvention formula, because I'm really curious about when you decided that you were going to put a book out there. So, tell me a little bit about when the reinvention formula came to creation.
One of the 10 lanes of my 10-lane highway was the book deal. For me personally, I don't want to self-publish my first book. I had this mindset that I wanted a major publisher behind me. It doesn't mean that I'm right or self-publisher is wrong. That's just the way I felt. And so I set my intention and then I divorced from the outcome and I just kept building and grinding and compounding and manifesting. And then Wiley actually came to us and offered us a book deal. I didn't have a lit agent or a manuscript or anything. And then I renegotiated a very big advance. I wasn't afraid to lose the deal. And they said, yes. And then they said, here's our stipulation. We have a very tight turnaround. You have a lot of momentum. We want this thing out. And so they gave us probably about 3 months tops. And never forget, I went to the New York City Library and I wrote for like 3 hours. I thought I wrote the whole book, brother. I came home and my fiance showed me how to transfer that to a Word doc so I can count my words. Had to be 50,000 words. It was like maybe 2,400. I'm like, oh my goodness. Wow. I can't just like show up and just write a book. Like I have to create a system and a process for myself. So I'll never forget December 2022, every single day, I woke up at 4 a.m., a little bit earlier than usual. And I would write for about an hour, hour and a half. That's it. And started to flow about 1,000 words a day, sometimes 1,500. And it just started to pour out of me. And the truth of the matter is I could have wrote more. but I had accomplished my goal. The book was complete. And this thing is everything I know to be true up until this point. It's a lot of stories, experiences, and lessons about myself, what I learned. It's also the 15 years of sharpening axe and studying personal development. And I'm just so proud of it. One of the reasons why I'm so excited about it is because it's not niche. It's for anybody in any area of life that wants to think and play bigger, get clarity, remove limiting beliefs, and make a major impact and dent in the universe. And in regard to commercial success, we just hit number 4 in the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, which is pretty cool. But that's how the book came about, brother.
Yeah, the formula. And you know, the formula that I'm sensing here in the interview is that running the marathon, you had 3 months between when you signed up and when you had Wiley come to you and say, you got to have a book out in 3 months. This 3 months sort of time frame seems to be something that's working for you.
It appears that way. You know what? You just connected the dots for me. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's very parallel, right? Because it's something else. And you know, listeners out there, I'm sure they're sensing that, you know, when there's something you don't know how to do, there's absolutely a path for you to be able to do it. You just need to commit and get started. Yeah. So when I talk to leaders, I often get, especially if I'm talking to someone who's in a position where they're leading large teams, large groups, large companies, they're often like scared to share their authentic selves. And a lot of the times it could be valid. Like the culture of the company could be such that maybe shareholders don't necessarily want that particular authentic self reflected. But in your interactions, have you seen people that you're either coaching with lean too far like one way? Or how would you say that, you know, they could recalibrate, right? So if they're in a position where they are in a place where they're not able to be necessarily authentic or they don't feel that way, how would you say that they could recalibrate?
You have to pay attention to your feelings and emotional states, right? Like the universe will provide feedback. You know if you're in alignment or if you're not. There's a certain sweet spot to being in alignment, to being around who you want to be around, being in a high frequency, being a vibrational match for abundance. I only know that now after reinventing myself. And when you're not in alignment and you're not your authentic self, let's just say you're in a relationship. I'm sure everybody can relate to this at some point. And like, you know, it's not the right fit, but maybe you're trying to make it work. You don't know if there's other options out there, but you know, in your soul, like this isn't how it's supposed to feel. It's too much work. Yeah. Not to say relationships aren't work, but it should, you know, so, or at a job. And if you're waking up on Monday and you're not pumped, right? Or you're looking forward to the weekend, that's feedback that you're being inauthentic by being at the wrong job because you don't really love it. It's just a job. You want to love what you do. And that's not to say we don't have our moments and our ruts and stuff like that. We're all human. But for the most part, you want to feel aligned and excited about the different things or people that you're around in your life. Non-negotiable.
I love that. I love that. And I love how your messaging points so much at two words that I hear all the time. You hear resilience, right? You hear adaptability, right? So have you met leaders? Have you coached people in positions where they're just really attached to their methods, right? Like that's worked for me forever, right? And so if you have that type of mindset, how do you usher in like a new perspective?
First of all, I think it's really opportunistic to work with a coach or a mentor in any capacity. You know, this is something that I used to not believe in. I used to have this mindset, like I have an ego, I'll figure it out. Nobody can do it better than me. But the truth of the matter is, like I said earlier, we don't have enough time. And that is an ego. You have to adapt the mindset that we don't know what we don't know. Yeah. Right? So like, for example, we talked about Dave earlier. Dave has 18 years on me. That's a lot of life experience. There's a lot that he knows that I don't, that he could help me with. Just like there's a lot someone else knows that maybe he doesn't. But I like to surround myself with people that are a little bit further ahead. It gives me perspective. It gives me fresh ideas. Someone could check me, say, Craig, what about this? That's been so helpful for me. And if I would highly suggest people get in communities, get in a member or a mastermind or a membership or go to an event or just be around different ideas, specifically big thinking ideas. It's contagious to rub off on you. And if someone's listening right now and like, well, I don't have the means to do that right now, that's understandable. Fine. For now, listen to a podcast, right? Read a book, do something to elevate your frequency where you could start getting a little bit better of a perspective, a little more clear-headed, and you could start to remove the scarcity and start to think bigger. So these are things that you have to do. Everyone talks about physical fitness. I want to make a big emphasis on mental fitness.
It takes just as much work and it takes just as much commitment to be in that sort of mental fitness. And I agree with you. These days, community is everywhere. You just have to go out and look for it, right? So if you want to be in a forum around anything, there it's out there and there's people out there willing to support you many times at no cost. Just it's in a community. So it's available and when you need it, absolutely commit to it. So let's talk about the podcast because it's incredible, the guests that you have on there. I mean, and like I said, when we started this, I love your style. I love how you bring authenticity into the podcast. I think that's a lot of why your audience resonates with you. You articulate well and you come from your own style. Is there like one episode or moment that kind of lingered in your mind or that you go to more than others?
I think they're all dynamic and special. And I'm so passionate about the podcast that it's like asking who's your favorite kid. So I would encourage anyone to dive in. Pick your poison. Do you like Hollywood? There's Alicia Silverstone and Frank Grillo. Do you like professional athletes? We have those. We have professional wrestlers, big time entrepreneurs and thought leaders, people doing great stuff. But it's not just to hear about their success. You can go to Google for that. It's to dive really deep, to ask the tough questions. What was it like when you were at rock bottom? How did you shift your perspective? How did you begin to think bigger? We have laughs, very strange on there. I like to ask funny questions, but really I like to ask questions that I think most people are afraid to ask. And ironically enough, that's actually what builds the deepest rapport and the best connection. So I think what we're doing with the podcast is something the world hasn't quite seen yet. And I think that's why it's been so successful. And a lot of the big guests are on that don't typically do other shows. They've liked the interviews so much that they end up repurposing the interview on their own stuff. So I'm super passionate about that. But if you ask me for one specific incident, I know it's not the answer you're looking for, brother, but just dive in. I don't think you can go wrong.
No. All right. Well, we can shift it then because you're talking to all these people with all sorts of different success, all sorts of different accomplishments. So are there certain habits or mindsets that keep popping up? Like, is there a thread that you see through a lot of the guests that you've interviewed?
I like to ask different things, but there are some commonalities. And one thing that I've seen often that I find very interesting is because I'm interviewing some really, really, really big world shakers, people that have done massive stuff, I like to find out what makes them tick. And one thing that I've heard consistently, and I think it's pretty interesting, is that most of the greats are not always motivated, right? Because if you wait till you're just motivated to start, you'll probably never start. Or maybe you'll start once, but then the next day, if you're not motivated, you'll stop. So a lot of these legends, they have systems and practices that they revert back to almost like a Navy SEAL. And that keeps them consistent and committed. And a lot of the time, look, hard work works. It's being consistent, staying in the fight, showing up, beating on your craft. And so I thought that was pretty cool. I think it's a misconception that people think high achievers are always motivated. They're not, but they're very consistent.
And you reflect that, my brother, in everything you've said in this interview today. And I'm still going to pull you out to summon up any legend. So if you could summon up any legend in history, past, present, and you could have a heart-to-heart, right, on the CLS experience, who would it be and why?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That was fast.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I think about this often. I've had his daughter on, getting closer. I like Arnold. I know he's a controversial cat, and I totally get that. I'm not saying you have to like everything about him. But I think one thing about Arnold that's undeniable is that guy's a visionary, right? Yeah. Coming to America, focus on bodybuilding, then doing real estate, then being the top of Hollywood, the highest paid actor, to the politics. He was always playing chess and thinking 10 moves ahead, and he was very methodical. And I just always found that to be inspiring, if I'm being honest. And, you know, back in the day when I started working out and stuff, he was an inspiration. I also loved his movies. And so that's just a guy that's at the top of the list is someone that I look forward to having a great conversation with.
Yeah, I can see that because his mindset and his commitment were apparent right away. He had a very singular focus. There's a documentary that I just saw maybe like a month ago about him. And I found him to be a really fascinating guy. What's that?
On Netflix, right?
On Netflix, yeah. Yeah. He's really the American dream personified, you know? Exactly. And when you want to think about authenticity, he's been pretty authentic. And he's had some real challenges in his life that he's overcame. And he's always kept it real. So yeah, I can appreciate that. And that's somebody you can actually have on the show. Like, it's not just a dream, right? So it's not like saying, you know, you wanted to bring, you know, I don't know, Martin Luther King on the show or something like that, where it wouldn't be possible. That's a possibility. So I love that. Yeah. Okay. One last question for you. And it is, what is one piece of Greg Siegel wisdom that you want to shine on our audience today in the lounge?
Playing small is canceled, straight up. I know this is cancel culture. I want to cancel playing small. I want everybody to lean in and discover why they're here. What is that next level of crazy expansion that's necessary for their soul, and lean into it. And don't ever stop believing that you're absolutely here to make a giant impact, have a ton of fun, unapologetically make a lot of money and put a dent in the universe. And if you're not in alignment, then you're not done yet, and keep going for that. It's available for all of us. We have to block out the interference and connect and call it in, but it's there. And I want everybody to go for that. Never settle. Took me 35 years. Better late than never. It doesn't take time. It just takes alignment. Why not you? But more specifically, playing small is canceled.
Yeah, you're not late. You are right on time. Playing small is canceled. It's gone. It's done. Forget about it. Amazing. Craig, it's been an enlightening journey. Walking through your experiences, walking through multiple stories about how to like really commit, build strength, achieve any goal you have. Sky's the limit. As a matter of fact, sky's not even the limit. Sky's the baseline. We're talking about going up into the universe here with Craig Siegel. Incredible conversation. Thank you for everything you're bringing in the world, shining light. And I am looking forward to reading your book. I'm going to do that right away. And B, seeing you shine this light across as many places, people, events as you possibly can. So thank you so much for what you do. And we will be hearing from you soon.
Thank you for having me, brother. And thank you for a fun, dynamic, and refreshing conversation. I love you.
You got it, brother. Anytime.